Well, hey there, Vinyl Guide listeners. It's Nate here. It's February 2nd, 2020. And unfortunately, I'm here with some tough news, but it's likely you probably already know already. A friend of the show, Andy Gill, best known for his work with Gang of Four, has died. For those unfamiliar with his work, Andy was the founder and leader of Gang of Four, an extremely influential band. They kicked off their career with the album Entertainment, and this album was so great. I mean, the energy of Entertainment, every time I play it, even some 40 years later, it just brings shivers and goosebumps down my spine and just makes me feel great. And it was such a highly influential release, still inspiring people to this very day, and is still counted amongst the top punk albums of all time. However, this LP was just a start to Andy's career. He went on to write and record another dozen or so albums under the Gang of Four moniker, as well as produce other bands, a lot of records you probably have in your collection, bands like Red Hot Chili Peppers, Killing Joke, The Stranglers, Regurgitator, and more. He even produced Michael Hutchins' solo album and helping piece it together after Michael passed. So Andy was a very special musician. The last tour of Gang of Four was a swing through Australia and New Zealand. And in preparation for the shows, I was lucky enough to interview Andy here on the Vinyl Guide. We had a chat about his career, the production of some of these landmark albums, the 40th anniversary of Gang of Four's Entertainment, and the then latest Gang of Four album, Happy Now. And we talked about a heaps more as well. Now, look, I hope wherever Andy is, I hope he knows he was so admired and his work enjoyed by millions and millions and will be for years to come. Andy really made an impact on this world, and we wish him well on his journey, wherever that may be. His records and music will always have a necessary place in the record collections of me and many listeners of the show. Now, it's time to remember Andy. Here's a replay of the interview that we had. Here's a replay of our interview, which was recorded January 25th, 2019, and released as episode 155 of the Vinyl Guide on February 4th, 2019. Here's our conversation with the late, great Andy Gill. Today on the Vinyl Guide, we're very excited. We have Andy Gill of Gang of Four. And man, do we have a lot to cover. A new LP, Happy Now, an Australian tour, the 40th anniversary of Entertainment. Where should we start, Andy?
Why don't we start with now and work backwards?
Okay. All right. What did you have for dinner?
I'm
kidding.
Well, it's breakfast time in the UK right now. And I just had 4 cups of tea.
Excellent. Okay. All right. We'll accelerate our journey here right now.
Okay.
The new LP, Happy Now, just announced.
Yeah,
very exciting. Now, I got to ask you, Andy, in the pictures, in the videos, I don't see you smile too much. You seem very serious most of the time.
I know.
Why do you name the LP Happy Now? Are you happy now?
Well, clearly not. It's one of those funny old titles. I think in a way it works a little bit like the title Entertainment. You know, it's like, what, are you sure? Are you serious? Is this really entertainment? And it throws up so many questions about the idea of entertainment and what it is and the industry that surrounds it. And I think Happy Now works a little bit in a similar way. It could be taken as kind of, it's like, you know, addressing everybody, and saying, okay, so we've got all this shit going on. Are you happy now? And it raises the question of what actual, you know, the idea of happiness and what it is and how you might get there to this fabled state of happiness.
That's interesting because Gang of Four has always had these titles of albums that are almost a mystery inside the title. Entertainment's one, Solid Gold, Content. Is it content? So I guess
yes.
Happy Now kind of goes in that same vein, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
What does bring you joy, Andy?
I think when a few things go right, that's a cause for real celebration. Because, I don't know, I mean, I think, you know, I have been accused of being a miserabilist. And, you know, some of my songs have a sort of darkness to them and maybe sound a little pessimistic. You know, I think the stuff that makes, you know, brings me joy is the same that brings anybody, you know, everybody joy. It's
magic mushrooms. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. yes. It's heroin. Yeah. God, I haven't done magic mushrooms for many years. Oh. Maybe I should try that.
Well, you are coming to Australia. I tell you what, I can meet you at the airport with a baggie. How would that work for you?
Right.
Now, look, this tour, you're coming to Australia in March, but before then you're hitting Japan and then China. Are these the first Gang of Four shows in China?
No. We were in China a few years ago. It was one of Jayla's first foreign trips with Gang of Four. That was a lot of fun playing in Beijing and Shanghai, and those are the places we're going back to. We're also playing in Shenzhou, and we're doing a couple of nights in Tokyo.
That's very interesting. Like, what is it like playing in China with the name Gang of Four that has such deep political connotations in a place like China?
Yeah. Well, you know, the authorities there are okay as long as it stays in English. When you go there, they want to see videos of the band perform. They want to check through the lyrics and so on and so forth. But we get a very excited young crowd in China. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, very into it. It reminded me a little bit of sort of like the vibe and the way everybody dresses up for the gigs and stuff. It reminded me a little bit of early 80s. New York, when everything was kicking off, reminded me a little bit of that in China.
Okay, because just kind of looking at your tour itinerary, China does not seem to be a place that would be openly welcoming a band like Gang of Four. I would imagine you guys would be the first ones not to get your visas approved.
Right. Well, the visa process is still ongoing, so you could be turned. You could be telling the truth. But you know, we've been there before, and you know, it's like with a lot of these places, including America, we're not going over there to play for the administration. We're going over there to play for the people who want to see it and the people that get something out of it, and they want to hear the commentary that we provide. And that's true whether it's Brazil, North America, Mexico, China, wherever, you know.
And we're looking forward to having you in Australia. Now, you and the band have always had very strong connections to Australia. Some of your production work, including Regurgitator.
Yes.
Ben is a listener of this show. He's a great guy. You also co-wrote and co-produced the Michael Hutchence solo LP. How did that project come together?
Well, it was funny that it was the mid-90s. I just finished the Gang of Four album, Shrink Wrapped. And just as I was finishing it, John King, the singer back then, announced that he had decided that he was, with immediate effect, going into the advertising industry, which I wasn't hugely happy about. So I was sitting around twiddling my thumbs, and the phone goes. This is like a few days after this had happened. Phone goes, Michael Hutchence saying, Andy Gill, would you be interested in playing some guitar on my new record? I said, yeah, fabulous. Yeah, I'd love to. And we spoke for a minute. Then we got off the phone. And then 5 minutes later, he rang me back and said, well, actually, what I meant to say was, would you be prepared to come and write some songs with me? So I said, great. And I took, you know, my kind of capsule recording studio down to the south of France, bass guitars, computers, ADAT machines, and microphones. And we just set up in one of the bedrooms in his house, and we just wrote a whole album there, basically, over that summer. It was, and we became very, very good friends. And it was completely tragic and heartbreaking when he died.
Yeah. I mean, while recording those songs, how serious was he around these recordings? Like, what did he want to see happen? What was his vision for the end result?
Well, he was, I think a lot of people would be surprised at what a hard worker he was. because, you know, obviously he's a fun-loving Sybarite, but there's also a very hard-working side to him. And I would come up, you know, I'd be in there coming up with grooves and doing the music, which he largely, you know, he'd say, "Oh, that sounds great." Yeah, you know, he would just encourage me to get on with it. And then at a certain point, he'd want to start singing on it. He'd work on lyrics. Sometimes I would throw in some lyrics with him. And he'd sit on the bed and just sing all afternoon, you know, and that's how he worked. And I was telling somebody yesterday, actually, that one of the things that surprised me was we'd worked all afternoon on a song, and we'd got a really good vocal developed, great melody, great chorus. It was all going really well. And then he said, "You know what, Andy, I'm thinking of doing this a different way." And I thought, "Oh no, it's great. Well, you know, we don't change it." He said, no, I want to try a different way. So we kept that. And then he did this completely different approach to the vocal. I don't know where it came from, how he managed to do that, but, you know, a completely different melody, totally different approach. And, you know, I respected him a lot for that, because it's hard to do that. And it's like not being satisfied. It's like, we may have the ultimate version, but maybe we don't. And I'm going to try it a different way. Mm. So it kind of impressed me.
It's very brave.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What was there left to do when he passed? What was unfinished? Was it 50% done, 90% done? What condition was left?
More than 90% done. And of course, when he died, it's not like you could just go and finish it off, because then the interminable legal wrangling kicks in. You know, it's lawyers all over the place. So it's not like you can just, and also because he was paying for all this himself. He was making the record, and when he was happy, he was going to give it to whichever label it was. You could be sure that if it had been previously signed to someone, it would have been out within weeks. But that wasn't the case. There was legal wrangling, and eventually it got resolved, and V2 stepped in, as far as I remember. And they said, "Okay, Andy, we want to finish this off now. Can you get in the studio and finish it?" I mean, there was one, you know, and the A&R person wanted to listen to absolutely everything that I had, which was fine. And of course, they picked on Slide Away as being a particularly moving and fantastic song. And they said, "Oh, we've got to finish this off." And I was like, "Well, look, you know, I've only got a little bit of vocals, Michael's vocals here. I'm not sure how I'm going to finish that off." And I said, "The only thing I can think of doing is asking Bono if he wants to contribute." So they said, "Yeah, brilliant idea." So, of course, I spoke to Bono, and he said, and he wanted to listen to absolutely everything. And so he listened to everything. And then I said, "Well, can you know, help me finish off this song, Slide Away?" And he said, "All right." So he came to my studio, and I wrote a bunch of words for him. I wrote a kind of middle-aged section. So, you know, it's this kind of – and then he sang on it. He sang some things that he thought of. He sang the thing that I wanted to make. And out of everything I got, I carved the song out of everything I had. It's a very moving song. It's a kind of, if you like, a bit of a farewell from me and Bono to Michael. But
yeah. Oh, it really is an amazing effort and well done. I'm sure that was very difficult to put together with everything that was going on at the time. So let's quickly talk about Entertainment, because 40 years ago, Gang of Four released Entertainment. And I'm not sure if it seems like 40 years for you, but I was just listening to that album today with my kids in the car, and everyone was just grooving with it. It sounds just as fresh today as anything. Why do you feel that album is still so highly revered? What keeps it so relevant even today?
Well, I think part of it is that a lot of bands have referenced it, you know, over the years, from the very big bands of the 80s and 90s, like REM or Rage Against the Machine or the Chili Peppers, you know, to another generation, you know, in the early years of this century with Bloc Party and Franz Ferdinand, and you know, so there's been, you know, and now today, yeah, Annie Clark talks about it from St. Vincent and stuff. So people, you know, reference the sound, people talk about it. So it sort of keeps it permanently sort of fresh in a way. And I guess, you know, it sounds like it could have been made last week, you know, because of the sound of it. And, you know, and there's a lot of young bands now in London and Britain that reference it again, whether it's Liars or Shame or one of these bands. So I don't know. It sounds current, and of course, lyrically, nothing much has changed. You know, so it's sort of,
unfortunately, it certainly gets a lot of attention. I mean, it's always on the critics' top list. People love talking about the album. Gang of Four has a lot of other great albums. Do you feel that entertainment sometimes sucks the oxygen away from some of the other work that people could be enjoying as well?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. You know, I mean, I hope that people give the new record, Happy Now, a lot of attention as well. I think, in a way, if I had to pick between Entertainment and Solid Gold, the second album, mm-hmm, I'd be tempted to go for Solid Gold in a way, because I think it just really grooves. And I think Shrink Wrapped from the mid 90s is a superb album, but you can't even get that now because I've got to wade through some legal stuff to make that available.
So we got to look for an old copy of Shrink Wrapped. Is that on vinyl? Has that one been released?
That's a good question. I don't think it is.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it was CD only.
Do you know if the original tapes of all the Gang of Four stuff are accounted for? Is there anything missing?
I haven't looked for it, to be honest with you. I've got one or two myself, but and a lot of those tapes, when we remastered some of Entertainment for CD a long time ago, mm-hmm, we found that the tapes were sort of rotting, basically. And you had to do this thing, you know, because the chrome, the metal stuff that's bonded to the tape, mm-hmm, starts to come off. And so you had to do this thing where you bake it in an oven, mm-hmm, for 3 days or something, at low temperature to make it stick to the thing again. And then you've got a few chances to actually get it digitally recorded before it falls to pieces. So I don't, wherever the tape went, that's a really good question. I don't know where the tapes are for that. It'd be great to find out.
You know, it's funny. We had John McDermott. He's the archivist for Jimi Hendrix. He was on the show before, and he mentioned something. He shared with me a very interesting scientific fact. Mm. The tape before 1972, recording tape, doesn't need to be baked if it was made before 1972. After 1972... they changed the materials they were using to make the tape. They stopped using whale oil. And apparently whatever they switched to requires them to bake tape now. So anyway, that's a fun fact for you, Andy. I'm not sure what you could do.
I always knew there was a reason to kill whales.
In fact, you kill a few on the way out to Australia.
I'll try. That's my best.
Going back a little bit further, the first single that Gang of Four had, Damaged Goods, Love Like Anthrax, it was put out on Fast Product. What are your recollections of recording that original single?
I do actually remember it, and I remember Bob Last driving us to the studio in his Mini, so we were packed in. I remember being in the studio. I remember recording, you know, I just remember recording it. I don't remember any particular incidents. There was probably a lot of arguing because there always was with Gang of Four.
Was it all in like one day One session.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
The original pressing of the record came with a sticker. Do you recall the story behind that sticker or the inclusion of the packaging?
The first single, the EP? What was the sticker?
It was like a negative image of what looks like maybe a dance scene, and it just has the names of the songs on it as well.
Wow, I don't even remember that.
Okay, all right.
I don't remember. Where are you seeing that?
It's online in Discogs.
Okay.
I could send you a link if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Also on that first single, in the run-out groove of the record, there was a message that read, "A Spiky Spectacular." Do you recall what that was in reference to?
No, but my guess is that the egocentric mastering engineer decided to put his nickname on it. That'd be my guess.
Oh, okay. All right. So he was Spike or Spiky.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. See, we go very deep. We get a bit nerdy here on the Vinyl Guide. So apologies.
I can tell.
Are you a record collector? Do you listen to vinyl?
I do listen to vinyl. And I wouldn't call myself a collector at all. No, no. Mm-hmm. But I'm too busy making the damn things. But I'm not a collector.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, I do want to play a track from your new Happy Now record here on the show.
Right.
I guess Paper Thin is the single that you're leading off with. And this is a Pledge Music campaign as well. I'll make sure the link is available for people to see and listen and order for themselves. So you've continued the Gang of Four output around all your other projects, your production work. What's your process in the studio? Are you spontaneous with your recording? Do you have a bit of a rhythm you get into with your musical output? How does that work?
So with Happy Now, when I was, I don't know, it was like last, it was the end of 2017, middle of winter here in the UK, and I just decided, right, okay, I've got a bunch of songs, I want to record them, and I would get up at about 5:30 in the morning, get a cup of tea, get into the studio, and start working on lyrics and song construction. And then I also wanted to work with other co-producers. I didn't want to produce it all myself. I thought it was important to get other heads in the on the music. So Ben Hillier, who is famous for working with Blur, Ross Orton, Arctic Monkeys, and MIA, those are the people I was working with. And they would turn up at about 10:30, 11:30, and then I'd do a full day's work. So it was really long hours, but really achieving a lot of stuff. And I think the momentum of working on Happy Now was part of what makes the song great. You know, I think in the past sometimes you got that thing, it takes as long as it takes, but I think that's the wrong approach, and I've learned something late in my career that it's, you know, momentum is very important. So I think that's why a lot of this. So we got an awful lot done, and like back last summer of 2018, 6 months ago, you know, I had about 17 songs done, and I could pick 10 for Happy Now. But it also means that I'm well ahead on the next record as well.
It sounds like you approach studio work like a worker. I mean, you know, up at a certain time and really giving it a full day of work, if not more. Is that you? Have you always had that discipline?
No, I haven't. this is a bit of a new thing for me. I really think it works. You know, I think in the past there's been a little bit of a sort of, you know, it's like we've got plenty of time, just make sure it's good, take your time. And I think that's the wrong approach. I think it's important to kind of throw yourself into it and work hard. And that momentum, and also you get the kind of, you see results much more quickly, which I think spurs you on. You know, the whole momentum thing, yeah, you do have to be a bit disciplined about it, you know. You can't get up at 5:30 if you've drunk 2 bottles of wine the night before.
But also, you've got the studio, you've got everything there. You could sit there and tinker on it forever.
Well, you could do. Yeah, I do have the studio here, but that's something I try and avoid doing. You know, the tinkering. I've done so much tinkering in the past. Down with tinkering. Tinkering is the enemy of the people.
Yeah, yeah. Albums are never done. They just escape.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Cool. Now, when you get to Australia, you're it's a bit of a whirlwind tour here. Anything mm-hmm. you're looking forward to in your Australia visit?
I've been to Australia many times, and I love it. And I'm looking forward to arriving there. I like the whole place. I particularly like Sydney and Melbourne, but you know, and I've got friends in Brisbane, so it'd be cool to see them. That's the regurgitator manager I'm talking about. And I produced the Mark of Cain, who come from Adelaide, so I'll be seeing them there. You know, so there's lots of people that I know, and I'm looking forward to seeing them. And getting some nicely warm weather would be great as well.
Oh, well, you'll get that. It's about 11 p.m. here, and I'm still sweating. It's so hot. So be careful what you wish for.
I know. You're not the first person who said that. But hopefully we'll be more like in your autumn, won't we?
Yeah. March 20, starting in Perth, yeah. And then going through March 25 in Adelaide.
So it shouldn't be too hot, should it?
You'll still want to bring your board shorts. It's, you know, who knows what's happening with the weather these days. The whole planet's fucked up. One last question, going back to some of the work that you did regarding some of the rare records, the production of the Killing Joke album. This is a highly desired album in the record collector circles. How did it come that Dave Grohl was involved in that project?
Well, it was because there's a Killing Joke song, which I think, let me remember. I think Nirvana had slightly pinched some aspects of this particular song. I can't remember which song it is now off the top of my head, but discussions occurred and Dave Grohl sort of admitted that yes, it had been, they had taken stuff from it. And so the offer was that he would play drums on the Killing Joke record, which was amazing for me because he literally is one of the best drummers in the world. When I record drums with bands, I'll often get the main grooves, the main parts, and then at some point I'll say, okay, I want just do drum fills forever, you know, just go mad. Just give me loads and loads and loads of drum fills. And when drummers do that, when they're doing a fill, very, very often they speed up a little bit during the drum fill. And when they come back to the beat, it's not on the one, it's ahead of the one. That happens an awful lot. So I have to kind of get in there and edit beat by beat in Pro Tools or Logic, which is a bit of a pain in the ass. Dave Grohl, on the other hand, every single fill he did was just absolutely, timing-wise, totally perfect. You know, so I'd be like, okay, start on the floor toms and come back to the snare, all the other way around, play triplets, play dotted eighth notes, you know, just give me every kind of drum fill you've ever done, which is what he did. And the beauty of it then is that you can just grab a half bar of drum fill and drop it wherever you feel like it should be. And so I was astonished that I didn't need to do anything. I could just cut these drum fills up and drop them wherever I fancy.
He's like a clock.
Yeah, it's like a clock. It's like it's synced up. Yeah.
Was he involved in the song construct, or did he kind of come in like a bit of a hired gun and just, you know?
Yeah, he said, I mean, the first thing he said to me, he said, I came in the studio and I said, you don't mind if we do the cymbals separately, do you, Dave? And maybe the hi-hat. And he said, mate, that's fine. You know, that's the way I would like to do it. You know, I'll do the tom separately and we'll do so that we get real power and clarity. And he said, think of me as your short order chef. I'll give you what you want. And He was true to his word.
Man, that's amazing. Andy, we got to have you back on the show at some other point. Maybe when you're in Australia, we'll have another sit down. I'd love to get some more stories. You've had an amazing career. Again, I want to call people's attention to the brand new Gang of Four album, Happy Now. I'll put links in the show notes for where you can order that from Pledge Music. And also, all you Australians, check out Gang of Four at their 40th anniversary of entertainment tour. It's going to start March 20th in Perth and go to the 22nd in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, and then Adelaide, and then other parts of the world. Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, my great pleasure. Good talking to you.